and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Egdon. With me is Leo Sun. Leo, how you doing?
I am alive, Ryan. Thank you for holding it down and for all of our guests for hopping on. For those who have been wondering where I've been a little bit under the weather for the past 2 to 3 weeks, so not a fun holiday season for me. If you haven't gotten your flu shot, get your flu shots. You know, I had to deal with that, and I'm now surviving from some pneumonia. But I will say this, Ryan, I will never take uninhibited breathing for granted ever again. These past 2 to 3 weeks, I've just been like a blur of coughing and like just like breathing as if I'm constantly working out kind of thing, and like aches and pains. So I'm glad to be back, though. I did survive it. Hopefully this is the worst of it. But again, if you're listening out there, take care of yourself. Be careful out there.
Yeah, good to have you back. Good to get back to our normal schedule following the holidays. We took that week off regardless of how you felt, and then found a replacement hopes last week. So we're glad to be back, and there's still a lot to, there always is a lot to talk about in Timberwolves land. It's been a crazy week. Basically, I've been on the road with the team. I went out to Atlanta and then out in Miami, and then I've been working with Unrivaled stuff after the Miami stuff. My day job has taken me to do some Unrivaled stuff. But yeah, I'm still on the road. I finally get to go back tomorrow and come home. But yeah, the Wolves, it's been an interesting, we'll talk about the Atlanta, Jack and I talked about the Atlanta disaster and kind of the fallout from that. But we'll start with the kind of a pair of wins. First, the one I was at in Miami, probably one of their better wins of the season, just taking care of business against a half-decent Heat team, kind of demolishing them in the second half. And then half-decent is not how I would describe the Wizards. They destroy the Wizards by, 26 points? Anytime you can get the road win on the second night of a back-to-back, you take it. But, Leo, any takeaways from the last two Timberwolves victories?
Yeah, I think the Miami game in particular, I was watching them, for fantasy basketball reasons, which I'm playing Ryan this week, actually. But for fantasy basketball reasons, I've watched the Heat quite a bit this year. And I've been really impressed with the way that they've been playing. I know that they've made some headlines earlier in the season just about the way that they're playing their offense. I know on like Peacock, or I think it was one of the new streaming services, they kind of broke down how they've been running their offense. And, it's not like the most creative thing ever, but it's definitely a new thing they're doing. And it really requires a team to be fully focused at the point of attack, at all ends, off ball, and at the point of attack, and just because everyone has to be engaged in it because everyone's a weapon on the Heat offense. And so I watched them beat Denver that game when Jokic went down at the half and they ended up crushing him in the second half. They went on to beat the Pistons, who were, I'm like super impressed by the Pistons. And so those are two quality wins that they had. And so just the style of play and how well they've been playing, I totally did not expect them to play well against this Miami team, given the way the Wolves are playing as well themselves. So the fact that they came in and executed the game plan, according to Anthony Edwards, was super surprising to me. I don't know if I'm quite ready to buy into the Wolves to turn a corner like narrative yet. I know it's easy to kind of feel that way after two big wins, but they're a long way from proving that. But like I said, that Miami game really surprised me. It's a tough style. And I think, like I said, when Ant said after the game that they followed the game plan for once, it's equally relieving as it is frustrating to hear, because it's like, okay, so clearly that there is a plan that the coaching staff is putting together that should work, you know, if they're buying in. And clearly when they are, it's working. But when they're not, it's like, all right, okay, what the hell is going on? And so, I love that win. I love the way that Ant kind of controlled it. I love the way that Julius Randle played throughout. The Wolves didn't have like a crazy good like shooting variance game. I mean, Dante has been ice cold for a while. He was really bad shooting the ball, but he was doing all the little things in there as well too. So even then, it wasn't like a smooth sailing win. I mean, they faltered a little bit in the fourth quarter, as we've been used to seeing from them. But, you know, they didn't let it get too out of hand. I mean, Ant had a really strong drive instead of pulling up for like some wild step back three, and he hit the crowd with a sit down. And I think that was like some good evolution by him and knowing like which shots to take.
Yeah, I actually kind of wasn't surprised that at least the Wolves played well in that game. It's just kind of been their pattern when they have these very, very seldom do like these low energy performances like the ones they saw in Atlanta or against Brooklyn at home. Very often do those come like back to back, and certainly like the Wolves had two in a kind of a three game span. It's not surprising, especially when they had the extra day off of practice, that they came out and played well, just how this team is. They had an off day on New Year's Day, if there was any sort of hangover, literal or figurative, they got to get that out then before a full practice day, which can be rare in the NBA. But on the January 2nd, they had a full practice day leading into the Heat game. Not surprising that they'd play well that game. The Washington game maybe was a letdown spot, but hard to outgun the Wizards in terms of that area, even on the second night of a back-to-back. And I guess for the Heat game, there's a trio of players I thought like stood out to me. First was just Ant, just pretty much scoring 30 points a night lately, just shooting well from all areas. The mid-range shot is going in, and obviously the threes, and the biggest thing is the shots in the paint are efficient right now, which they really weren't last year. And then Naz Reid was fantastic. Rudy goes out with his fourth foul in that third quarter. And they bring in Naz, cause that's the natural rotation. And when I saw it, they were up a couple points, and I was like, oh, this is trouble here. They're going to be in trouble trying to guard this Heat team. And they did just fine. They covered up for Rudy while he was on the bench with foul trouble. And when Rudy came back in the fourth quarter, they absolutely blitzed the Heat, and that's where they pulled away. And that's like the third player that, was fantastic in that game, and the Wizards game, especially too, is Rudy. Rudy Gobert has just been basically sensational for the past month, really all season. We'll talk about if he should win Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, it's hard. The Wolves are basically the worst team in the league defensively without him, and with him on the court, they only trail OKC, who's miles above everyone defensively. He's just been phenomenal, and I thought like he was fantastic in the Heat game. Adebayo got him with that it was like a step back three, kind of turned him around. That can happen sometimes, and I'm sure there was social media clips of Rudy going the wrong way or whatever on that play. But from there, like, Adebayo finished with 12 points, and Rudy was locking down the paint. And then you'd look at the Wizards game, and I've said this before, it's like there's some games where it just feels like, oh, the Wolves won because they had Rudy Gobert and the other team had no offensive option while Rudy was on the court. And that was, among other things about the Wizards, that was the thing about that game, is that just the Wolves won that game kind of before it even started because Rudy stepped on the court for him.
Yeah, I think Rudy by far in that Wizards game was certainly the best player on both sides of the court, I would arguably say, even on offense. I mean, the way that he was, I think the play that really everyone took away was when he had the ball at the top of the three-point arc and he literally dribble drove around Alex Sarr, who's a league leader in blocks per game, and he just dunks it with his left hand like it was reminiscent of a Karl-Anthony Towns drive that we're used to seeing. Now, again, I don't know if this is a recipe for success all the time, but, I mean, that just shows the confidence that he has, not only in himself, but that his teammates also have in him right now that, you know, I think he took a corner three, I think his foot was on the line game.
I wanted that to go in so bad.
Yeah.
I was there. That would have been so great for me, personally, selfishly.
Right. Yeah, but I mean, like, you see his teammates also, like, feeding him. I mean, like, Ant's hitting him on alley-oops, Jaden's hitting him on those drop-offs, Julius is hitting him in the right spots in the pockets as well, too. And so you love to see that kind of starting to become a little bit more consistent. You know, that was evident for sure in that Wizards game. And, yeah, I mean, the Wizards game, you know, it was a blowout. There's not too much to say about that Wizards game, but I feel like when I was doing the recap, I think, in theory, where it really started to fall apart was when CJ McCollum went up for a dunk. That was very unnecessary, and he got hung on the rim, and then it all just kind of snowballed from there. And it would be hard to be a Wizards fan right now. I think I was getting into a little back and forth with the Timberwolves fan who was, I think, at the Wizards game, and I was like, oh yeah, well, I mean, there's not that many Wizards fans out there, but the ones that were kind of rooting for Anthony Edwards. Like, no, there's plenty of Wizards fans, you know, blah blah blah. And I'm like, I know, but it's just hard to kind of. I'm sure most Wizards fans, rightfully so, are rooting for losses right now, anyways. So, you know, it's just definitely one of those things where, I think Jim P. Alan Horton were kind of talking about it on the broadcast of like, man, like this Wizards compete like level is just so low right now. Like, they did not give a crap at all in that second half of trying to put up any type of defense to stop the Wolves there. But again, credit to the Wolves. I mean, they took care of business, and you know, they had alternated bad losses with good wins. You know, it was the loss to Brooklyn, and then the 30 point win against the Bulls, bad loss to Atlanta, good win against the Heat. And so again, you think about on the back-to-back end of a four-game road trip, you know, on the road in Washington, total trap game, but they didn't allow themselves to fall in.
Yeah, and I wrote that at the end of my game recap piece after the Heat game was like solid win, good stuff. Like, I like there's no need to like the Hawks game can be bad in and of itself, and the Heat game can be good in and of itself, and you don't have to let the two other affect each other. But what I wrote was like you got to keep stacking these performances. Obviously, you have a bad game and you followed up with a good one, like that's obviously a good thing, but you got to keep doing it. And that still stands after a solid enough Washington win. But like big picture, you mentioned like the couple wins don't shift the narrative. And I'm just kind of where I'm at with this team big picture is like, this is just what the team is. This is who they are. What they're 23-13. I can do the quick math here on what win pace that is. Yeah, they're on a 52 win pace. Like that's who this team is. Like maybe the highs are going to be high and the lows are going to be low, and maybe they can like they have a switch to turn on like they did last season. But like this is what this team is. They're going to have bad games. They're going to have good games. But their underlying number, everything is trending towards like them winning 52 games. If they do finish with 52, that's going to be, I would guess that's actually going to have a half decent shot at the four seed given Denver won against Philly today. But I still think Denver is going to continue to kind of lose games, even like 500 for the net. Well, Jokic is out, I think would be a generous record for them. So if you win 52 games, you're going to probably be in like the four or five seed. You can win a playoff series. You could win two. Hard to see. We don't need to go that much deeper, but like I just think this is what the team is. So I don't think either the nice wins or the bad losses have to greatly disrupt any narrative. I just think like this is where this team is trending. If you can remove some of just like we'll talk about the low effort games or whatever, but if you can remove some of those, like let's move on with our assumptions of this team. Like this is who they are. They're a 52 win team. That's what they are now. Let's assess, do they need to add X player? Do they need to trade whatever or sign whoever? But I think certainly this far, almost 40 games into the season, like it's no one game or even no stretch of games is really going to like pull me too far in one direction about what this team is.
Yeah, it's, you know, those two losses to Brooklyn and to Atlanta, I felt like the games looked kind of how I felt, which was basically like a fever dream, you know, out there. Their players were just kind of walking through the motions, pretending they were playing a professional basketball game where they clearly were not in it. And that happens, you know, that happens. I mean, the Thunder lost by 30 points pretty much against the Hornets at home. You know, like teams have that. Even the championship, you know, aspiration teams have that. Now, it definitely had a little bit of a stench, in my opinion, of something else maybe going on behind the scenes. But at the end of the day, I think it's a simply put, as what Ant said, that I mean, it's Timberwolves basketball at this point. And again, that sounds like it's like this really inflammatory remark, but it's like, no, I mean, like literally the give a shit factor is the biggest swing set for this Timberwolves team. Like when they really do give a shit, whether they're playing in, you know, the playoffs, when they really do give a shit versus when they're playing just kind of these, you know, January games that don't really seem like they mean that much. And so I agree with you. Yeah, maybe this just is who the Timberwolves are, and we know that they're capable of, you know, Western Conference final appearances, being a top three or four team in the league when it really comes down to it. But, you know, their ceiling should be higher than that if they can kind of fix that. Like, all right, we'll just kind of play up and then play down, and what's kind of like, you know, Jekyll and Hyde type of effort.
Yeah, I think, yeah, let's kind of dive into the Brooklyn and New York, or, yeah, the game at home against Brooklyn and the New Year's Eve game on the road in Atlanta. And I think it's important to remember, or it's important to point out like two different things, is that one, all teams have games like that. There, every single team and every single schedule will have games that look like the one in Atlanta. That is true. It is not unique to the Wolves. What I do think is unique to this Wolves team, as far as all the teams that are going to end up winning 50 plus games, is they come, those type of games come more often than ideal. It's not a death sentence, but like, I just think that's true, that there's a general moodiness or whatever with this team. And it causes them to have in the span of three games, just two like unacceptable performances. They never at one, like basically wire to wire losses against teams like Brooklyn was playing well at the time and still kind of is. So like that one made a little more sense, and But Atlanta had lost seven in a row, and I get they didn't have Trae Young, who sounds like they're going to trade here pretty soon. But like, anytime a team ends their seven-game losing streak against you, that's not great. So I think it's important to point out, like, every team has them, but like that doesn't excuse, and none of the players were saying that that their performance is, that's okay. I talked about it and tweeted out and did all sorts of stuff in Atlanta. I do think that if I were to say there's something going on with the team, I don't mean it's like, certainly not like Jimmy level of that, back in the day then, or even like the D'Lo stuff that like the unhappiness and like the locker room stuff from back then. I don't think it's really even that. I just think at least it's hard to tell if it's like just a short term thing or if it's maybe more deeper, but like I do just think like there's the team isn't kind of on the same page right now. And maybe it's just one road trip, right? Like it was a road trip that they won 3 out of 4 games. If that's the other thing, if I would have told you going into that road trip, the Wolves would win 3 of 4 of that road trip, I think everyone would have been like, yeah, solid, good stuff. So I do think it's almost like it's on us a little bit too, to chill out and not take every single game, as like a referendum on whatever. But I think I also don't like take back any of the things that were said about that game or after that game, because it is concerning. And if the Wolves want to be a serious team and compete for multiple playoff victories, the finals, the championship, like those type of games need to be few and far between instead of like seemingly a few times a month.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend to be a guy that has been part of a professional sports scene before, even in the locker room during like the heat of the battle type situation, but that's where I'd like to see Anthony Edwards grow a bit more. I'm not saying he has to turn to someone he's not, but he is the unquestioned leader of the team. And Julius Randle is always more of a soft-spoken kind of dude. He's not the guy that's going to be like, oh, come on, guys. Like, you know, we got to get together. I mean, you got guys like Rudy and Mike Conley that are like, you know, maybe vocal about it, but are those guys that the rest of the team, I don't want to say that they don't respect him, but are those the guys they're going to listen to? I mean, I think was it the Brooklyn game, I think it was, when Rudy was kind of questioning the care factor of the team. Like, you know, does this team care enough, you know, type of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's absolutely the right question to ask. Like, if you do care, then why is this happening type of thing? And so, you know, I like to see Ant continue to evolve. I mean, again, I don't want to just play the age card and say he's still young. You know, I don't want to play the blame game on Finch either and say, it's on the coaches to figure that out. Because clearly the coaches are telling the players what they need to tell them, maybe, you know, for whatever reason, it's not getting through against certain opponents. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, this team doesn't go as far as Ant's going to take them. And that's not only on the court, but off the court in the locker room as well, too. So, you know, he doesn't have to change who he is as a person, but maybe he needs to recognize, like, hey, when this is happening, like, maybe I could do more to course correct at halftime or whatever the case is. You know, we hear so much about, oh yeah, Finch cussed us out at halftime, man, and you know, we came out the other way. I mean, like, that's happened many, many times. And so I'm not saying Ant has to be the guy to cuss him out, but maybe like he can take the reins a little bit more, however that may be. So I do think that that's something that is a bit concerning.
Yeah, and there's a lot of good quotes that I tweeted out that I thought were very incisive about where the team was at least on New Year's Eve. Rudy had the quote, like, do we care? Are we a team that just is going to coast by, or are we trying to win stuff? Dante had quotes that were like, it's not on the coaching staff, it's on us. And that kind of matches with what Ant said, in Miami, that was like, we don't follow the game plan sometimes. I don't know why, but we just don't. And I think it's almost all of these answers come with like, I don't know. I don't know why this keeps happening. I don't know why. And maybe that could just be like how they answer it in media, and they don't feel comfortable really explaining it, but I think they need to figure out why, or at least to a certain extent. And again, if they have 40 games, 40 something games left, did they have one or two games like that the rest of the way? Like that happens. That is it. Like what you mentioned, OKC got blown up by Charlotte. Like, these type of games are going to happen. It's not that it never happens, but like, it just needs to be, like the exception. Right now it feels like the exception is like a month straight of just like hard, tough, following the game plan type wins. But yeah, I don't know, I'm still kind of trying to gather more information about where this team is at, and maybe coming home for a few games can do that. And maybe playing some Western Conference teams. They've had like eight.
Yeah.
They're in a stretch of eight straight against the East in 10 of 11. So always a crazy part of the schedule.
Ryan, if I had to ask you just kind of right off the top of your head now, if I could tell you that the Wolves are going to finish in the Western Conference Finals and lose again, say in like five games or whatever, would you be like, yeah, you know what? I'd accept that fate.
Would I accept? Like you're saying like
would you
I
be
get
happy
to choose?
With that? Yeah, like it's like, hey, either you have mystery box, you have no idea how far they could go, they could win a championship or they could lose in the first round, or you can guarantee they're going to make the Western Conference Finals and lose in five again. Like, which one do you feel like you'd be more like apt to lean towards?
The lose in five again is like the biggest piece. Like, I would rather like lose in the second round by seven games than make the West Finals and lose in five. Like, I just want to feel like, I don't know, that's tough. Because I think getting like just, I've always said like get Ant into as many playoff series as you can, get him as many reps, get him. And they've done that. They've played what, six playoff series the past two seasons, eight in the past four seasons. Like it's just so clear every time he levels up mentally, physically, and with this game, every new playoff series, every new test, every new puzzle that there is to solve. So part of me feels like if this team, as at least right this second, like the team, the version of the team that we sit on here with January 5th, I don't think this team is good enough to win the title. It's not to say in March, April, whatever, things can have changed. So like, but like right the second, they're not good enough. So if we're looking at it through that lens, like just get as many playoff series in as you can. And however the season ends up ending is whatever.
Yeah.
But I do want to see a little bit more of like, I don't feel like there's any reasonable path for them to beat Oklahoma City in that series last year. They lost a close game four, but like even if they won game four, it just felt like they had no chance to go down to Oklahoma City and win a game. And the Dallas series is kind of the same way. And even if they had won the series, I think Boston, if they had made finals, I think Boston had proven that they were the superior team. They were the best team in the NBA that year. I don't think the Wolves had a realistic chance of beating them. So it's like, I just want to feel like, okay, yeah, we lost, but like if X, Y, Z could have gone better, we would have won. And here's a realistic way we can fix X, Y, Z, where if they get to a dead end again and it's like, okay, this version of this team isn't good enough. And I mean, in the off season, you can make moves, the salary cap opens up, all that stuff. But I don't know. It's an interesting question. Do you have an answer for yourself?
I mean, I don't like off the top. The reason I even asked that question was because, you know, I harken back to when Ant says, you know, well, maybe this is just Timberwolves basketball. Like, it's been 2 years of, you know, obviously it's different storylines. There's two very different teams and different opponents that they played. But this is who the Wolves are. And they, like, always are a team that can make the Western Conference Finals, like this iteration of the team, and just can't get over the hump. Like, would we be okay with that? Like, I'm with you in that I don't think that this is maybe a team that's like, okay, well, we're a championship, like, roster right now. There's definitely a lot more moves I think that could be done. There's a lot of extra fat that could be cut off around the edges, I think, and you know, maybe turned into something better. The right deal kind of falls into our laps. But I do also believe that, like, you know, a lot of winning a championship is luck, and getting to the finals, even winning the finals, a lot of it could be on luck, and you just want to get as many shots at the barrel that you can to hopefully get lucky. You know, 1 year, if they're getting three shots at the Western Conference Finals, okay, well, you know, Dallas and the Thunder and OKC, like, they didn't really have any bad injury luck that happened. I'm not saying you're wishing for injuries, but that does happen. That's how the Raptors beat the Warriors, you know, in the finals. And even you can argue that that's maybe how the Pacers got that far with Jason Tatum going down against the Knicks, and then so, you know, the Pacers got to avoid the Celtics, you know, who were the favorites. And then even the Thunder last year, I mean, they dealt with Tyrese Halliburton, who was leading the team in game seven, had the Pacers up before he blew out his Achilles, unfortunately. And so, you know, that's all part of that luck factor. And again, you never want to see that. That's just the truth of it. That happens. And so maybe the Wolves make it to the Western Conference finals being the moody team that they are, maybe something falls in their favor, maybe something worse falls in their favor, God forbid. I'm not even gonna speak that into the ether, but for me, I think, yeah, I would be more than happy if this Wolves made the Western Conference Finals and lost in five again to kind of give themselves that shot and that potential luck to be on their side. That's kind of how I feel about this iteration team. I do think, similar to you, that there's probably many moves to be made before the Wolves are truly like in that upper echelon of, like, you know, say OKC, you know, Denver, you know, whoever, to compete. Or maybe, you know, after expansion and us being relocated to the Eastern Conference Finals, maybe that'll be our time, you know. So we'll see.
I will say, as far as like the Ant, this is Timberwolves basketball quote, I think it is important with anything that Ant says, try not to read. It's not that Ant doesn't speak what he said. It's like, try not to read three levels deep into what Ant means is surface level. It's first or second level. He's not really. So I don't think he meant that, like, Timberwolves quote is like, we're doomed. Like, this is how we're always going to play. I think it's just like a phrase. Like, this is just Timberwolves basketball. It's not, he's not, I don't know. It kind of reminds me of when he said Bones was his guy and wanted Bones to play, and people took that as a shot at Rob. And I think a lot of us were like, no, he's not thinking about it that way. Like a lot of us do, where it's like, well, if Bones is in the rotation, then Rob can't play, which means Ant is against Rob. Like, no, it's not that deep. He just, like, Ant just likes Bones. Like, it doesn't have to be anything deeper than that. So I do think with that specific, this is Timberwolves quote, I do think it's like, he just meant they were playing crappy ball. Like, I think in that specific instance, like, that's all it meant.
That's
not to say, like, they need to stop playing crappy ball. They obviously do. But like, if someone that's been around the team 20 years said that, it obviously would come with a little bit more weight. But we talked about changes that need to come. One of the changes that they can make before the trade deadline is moving guys in and out of the rotation. I asked Finch about that in Atlanta, and he was quick to kind of shut down that idea that they could make rotational tweaks. Obviously, things can change. We're already like a half week out from that game at this point. Leo, I wanted to talk to you about the Iowa Wolves, specifically really Johan Berger and anyone else down in Iowa that you wanted to talk about. I know you've been writing about the Des Moines Iowa Wolves down there. But like, my big burning question, if we want to turn it into a howl or foul, is do you feel like Johan Berger right now, they just called him up from the G League, do you think he's ready to play NBA minutes, say, basically the non-Rudy minutes? So that's like, I mean, that's like 18 minutes a game. But like, do you think he is ready to play NBA minutes right now?
I hate to say it. I think that it may depend on who they're playing. If they're playing the Washington Wizards from the other day, yeah, absolutely. Get them in there. You know, we saw almost a whole quarter of Johnny Juzang and Joe Ingles, right? No, but I would say, honestly, the real answer is not quite. I think he's fine enough right now where he's showing flashes with the G League. The Iowa Wolves, despite, you know, kind of barely having any practice with him, they're really just kind of throwing him in there, kind of seeing what he could do. They're running some sets for him, clearly trying to see how he could fight against like bigger competition, against real game action. The athleticism and size certainly pop. I mean, he's gliding down the court, like, and he's jumping all over the place. He falls down like almost every other play and rolls back to his feet and like runs the other way. But I think, like, as any 19-year-old, you would expect that there's a lot of edges to round out still. The biggest issue for him is just kind of his strength. Oftentimes, he kind of gets bodied out of the paint on both ends of the court, whether he's trying to get defensive rebound or just kind of wedge him out when he's trying to defend in isolation. I mean, we kind of saw, I think it was preseason against Jonas Valanciunas and the Denver Nuggets, where he just cannot stop someone from that size because he doesn't know how to leverage his athleticism and body against a bigger dude like that. And so that's happening a lot so far for him in isolation. He's just kind of getting like put under, you know, stuffed under the rim type of thing. And so certainly that'll come with age and experience and kind of maturing into his body. There's also times where he's kind of running around, like I said, like a spring chicken with his head cut off, kind of unsure of where to go. He was kind of be rolling around where it's like, all right, man, maybe like don't run around, maybe kind of stay in the darker spot a little bit, you know, things like that. But overall, I mean, I think it's been encouraging. In his last game with the Iowa Wolves, Rocco Zakarski, who was out with the illness, allow Berger to get increased opportunity. He played 33 minutes, which is a career high for him in Iowa or Minnesota basketball. And he had 14 points, 13 rebounds, which is career high, assists, two steals, five blocks, both career highs as well, too. If you follow me on Blue Sky, I'm tweeting out clips of it throughout on my account over there of kind of some of the stuff that he's doing. There's some blocks that he just comes out of nowhere, just kind of weak side rotation or just from out of his zone flying in. He's finishing alley-oops, you know, really strong. Strong with his hands. So there are a lot of encouraging things. I just don't think he's quite there yet. I think when, you know, we're frustrated about like Nas, like I get frustrated when Nas is not like rebounding the ball or Julius is not rebounding the ball on the defensive end. Like if you're frustrated by that, Yoan will probably be even worse than that just because he's kind of flying around. He's not really taking like the right angle for like boxing out and things like that. So he's not going to help on that end. I mean, will he add a lot of rim protection? Yeah, sure. As a role man, but yeah, I think it's a little too early to break that. As far as like, you know, I mentioned Rocco Zakarski earlier, I think he has some of the same limitations. Also as a 19-year-old, I think adjusting his strength and to the speed of the game is kind of his biggest issues. But he has some really, really cool strength. I think with Yoan, it's pretty straightforward. You know what you're getting, rim runner, athletic, shot blocker, that type of beat. Well, Rocco's a little bit more on, he has a little bit more seasoning there in terms of, he can really shoot the three ball. He's not taking them at volume, but they have increased in efficiency as the season's gone on. He's comfortable hitting corner threes. His size and length is clearly there. He's great at blocking shots, just as good as Yoan is in a different way. He's just like a massive human being that's just like, okay, guys are trying to challenge him, and it's just like not working. While Yoan's kind of like coming out of nowhere. And, you know, same thing, though. He needs to work on his defensive rebounding because he, too, even though he's bigger and longer, he probably gets pushed out even more than Yoan does, where he's just kind of like guys are going right at his body, nudging him in, and then he's just totally off kilter and he can't get back in the play. He also kind of has a high dribble because they're trying to use him a little bit more as a playmaker. He has really good vision for his size and really great touch. I think when he has a vision to see it, but sometimes that handle is not there where it's like he's getting ready to pass the ball and he has really high dribble. Being at 7'3", of course, you're going to have high dribble, but he just kind of gets picked off. So he has some turnover issues. But yeah, I mean, those two bigs, I think they are where they're supposed to be at right now. I'm encouraged with them at 19 years old. I don't think either of them are ready to play real meaningful non-Rudy minutes for the Timberwolves yet. But it is exciting to watch them grow so far.
Yeah, going back to Berger, I tend to believe that he's not quite ready, especially just the way that the coaching staff has played with him. Like, I don't think they feel he's ready to come in and play 10, 12 minutes a night and like be a quality NBA player. And maybe we're at the point in the season where it's like it's time to just like see. Maybe he can play backup center, and now you don't have to trade for someone. You just have someone. I'm not terribly against that, because the backup center minutes or the non-Rudy defensive minutes have been so terrible, and it's just kind of it's become clear that like Nas and Julius as the 4 and 5 is just not a productive enough NBA lineup defensively. They're still a plus because the offense is really good when those two are on the floor, but in terms of defense, it's just like it really feels like that's the biggest glaring hole, is like how the Nuggets got Valanciunas. Like that type of player would be probably perfect for the Wolves. It would necessitate playing Nas more at the three, if you're going to bring in a center, and instead of taking away Nas's minutes, you're lowering somewhere else's. But yeah, I kind of agree with you. I just think I get like people want to see him play, or they want to like let's at least see it. Let's at least see it. And I kind of I get that, and I agree with that on some level. I also just kind of think the coaching staff has a good idea and the front office has a good idea of where this kid is at, and they're choosing not to play him. So for me, it feels a little bit like how would I have a better idea of where their player is at than them? I feel like I'm hesitant to feel like he's ready to play right now. Maybe they should just try him out anyway. I don't necessarily hate that idea either, but my best guess is that it's just not. He's so young. Like, he just started playing basketball not that long ago. He's just drafted. There's still plenty of time, obviously, but still probably like a year away. Maybe next year it's more of where Berger starts to join the rotation.
Yeah, it's a little reminiscent of that conversation we had about Rob right around this time last year as well, too. We're like, all right, is it time to start feeding Rob minutes more at the cost of maybe some wins this season? Where we're like, all right, like, you know, the season's not going that well. All right, let's give Rob some minutes. You know, we kind of had that conversation for a couple, like, weeks, if not months. And I don't think the Wolves are quite doing as bad as they were last year at this stage. But, you know, I think it's some of the same hints of that where it's like, oh, well, there's a novelty of a new young guy that, like, you know, who knows what he could be. I mean, we see the fun highlights of him, you know, finishing alley-oops and him blocking shots out of nowhere in the G League. But when in reality, when he's playing NBA minutes, you know, it's going to be a different question. You know, you're going to see a lot of things that might frustrate you in his game. And so, again, I've watched pretty much almost every Iowa Wolves game right now. This is not to say that, you know, he's behind schedule, that he's not going to be anything in the future. But just right now, I think given where the Wolves are at, I don't know if he's ready. Again, injury could create opportunity. I'm not wishing for that, but you never know. I mean, Rudy's playing really, really well right now, but he's also not super young. If at some point, you know, he, you know, has some minor, hopefully just a very minor injury, and they have to kind of rest him for a week, sure, maybe run up Johan in there, some backup, you know, big minutes for a little bit, and then we can kind of see what happens. It's a long season. But yeah, I mean, as far as the Iowa Wolves, though, I mean, those are the two main guys that obviously a lot of guys are watching. You know, for those of you who maybe are sickos and follow the Wolves even at a more granular level, Tristan Newton, who was on a two-way with the Wolves last year, got signed by the Rockets on a two-way deal. Tristan Newton was one of the best G League players, or is one of the best G League players this season right now. I think he's top two or three in scoring. He's shooting like a crazy effective field goal percentage right now. And so congrats to Tristan Newton. It sucks that it didn't work out with us here. Obviously, our other two ways other than Rocco are Enrique Freeman and Johnny Juzang. Juzang, you know, still hanging out on the bench mostly. And Enrique Freeman's kind of been hit or miss. So I would have loved to see us maybe spend that two-way on Newton instead of on Freeman. But today is January 5th is the first day of 10-day contracts being available as well, too, to sign. So you're going to see a little bit more movement, maybe among some other teams, whether it's calling up some guys from the G League or just signing some guys off the street on 10 days. You know, it's always kind of exciting this time as we're nearing that January 15th as well, too. There's starting to be a little bit more movement of the wheels as we kind of slowly grind towards the trade deadline. It's going to be cool to see. I will say this, Ryan, I've heard some murmurings. Some of my inside sources that the Wolves have been making calls. They are interested in adding a scoring punch, a secondary creator. They've called on a couple teams to ask. Rob Dillingham is a guy I think who is on the trade block right now. Doesn't mean that they're going to be urgent to want to get him off, but they are exploring that option right now. And so we'll see what happens. Trade deadline's still over a month away. But yeah, I do think that there will be some movement that we'll see. But again, most deals that are talked about never happen. So also it's possible nothing happens.
Yeah, it feels like where the Wolves are at right now is that they got to make some sort of trade. Last year, it didn't feel that way. Last year, it was like, they got these eight guys. Like they have, obviously Mike was playing better and they had Nikhil. Like, they just had eight solid guys and it never felt worth it. It like, and then they had ninth guys of Jalen Clark and Shannon was playing well, like just no need to really mess with it unless they were going to make some sort of big trade involving like Julius or Nas or whatever. And obviously they didn't feel the need to do that. And this year feels totally different. And while I'm skeptical that they're going to trade someone like Julius or Nas or Dante the deadline, like you mentioned, like someone like Rob and TJ and Jalen Clark, trying to bolster that group, Mike, maybe, I don't know, like trying to reorganize that group, I think would make a lot of sense. And even just adding a player to the rotation where it feels like really only feels like six guys right now, the starters plus Nas, like it feels like you can count on every single game. And that's just a night and day difference between this year and last year. And we still got a month until the deadline. So I think we're still kind of in the waiting game, still figuring out what exactly type of player, the contracts, blah, blah, blah. But it does feel like trades are going to be more likely this time around than in years past.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect anything super major. Like, I don't think there's really any connection with Trae Young right now or, you know, like the John Morants. I don't think the Wolves are doing any of that. But yeah, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Maybe it's bringing back Dacian Nix. No, I'm just kidding. But, you know, there could be some smaller moves, I think, in the future. Maybe like a more Monty Morris type level move. So we shall see.
Yeah, and if there is a big move to come, I think the offseason is when I would look for that, if that makes sense. Like you're moving Julius, you're trading Nas for a guard like that type of move, I think, would be an offseason move where you get another season of clarity on this version of the roster, plus Mike's $10 million comes off the books, assuming he's still on the roster. Just you get more flexibility that way. But let's move into our Apex Alphas of the Week, our leaders of the pack. I'm going to go with Rudy Gobert. He's just been sensational. I already mentioned the Wizards game where he just deleted the paint from the other team, but it's really been a whole month of him just playing the best basketball he has in the Timberwolves, and it's not just defense, it's offense, and the way they've been utilizing him in offense has been night and day different from even a season ago, two seasons ago, where it felt like he was just a complete liability on the court on that end. Hasn't been the case. They've been using him in the short roles. He's been, like you mentioned, the driving dunk that he had. He has the occasional poor shot or layup that doesn't even hit the rim or whatever, but he's just been sensational. I think it's interesting that his two worst games maybe of the season were both those two bad losses, Brooklyn and Atlanta. He's usually the one that is able to like keep the team stable in those matchups, and it happened to be the games that he was. I just think like the team is almost going as far as he can take them. In some of these games, and when he has a bad game, the team goes with him. And it feels like the only way, it feels like he should get Defensive Player of the Year, and the only reason he's not going to is because they don't want to give him a fifth one. Because he's been as valuable as any other defender in the entire league. The Wolves would be lost defensively without him. We've had a lot of Rudy Gobert trade talks. A lot of the fan base has talked about that, and he feels about as indispensable as anyone on the roster. Like there's no way that they could get rid of him because like they desperately need his minutes defensively.
Yeah, I like that pick. I would have gone Rudy if you didn't go Rudy for sure. It's been super cool to see him out there really taking that next step again. Maybe we'll see that first three-pointer like we kind of talked about earlier. But yeah, I mean, he's definitely holding it down. And I love that Jim Peterson's, you know, doing as much as he can, and Alan Horton as well, too, to try and, you know, pump him up. Because, again, it's so easy and, you know, fun for other people of other teams, other fan bases, try and break him down. Like, oh, he got spun around by Bam, like you said. Or, oh, did you see him airball the shot? But it's like, honestly, I mean, he's been dominating. And, you know, that's a Rudy that the Wolves will really need. Because I think, you know, oftentimes we talk about, oh, well, you know, Rudy's getting older. You know, maybe he's really hitting that decline now. He's hitting that wall, but he's shown that. No, it's not yet. Not right now, at least. Not this season. So love to see it. My Apex Alpha for this week, not the most creative, but I'm going with Anthony Edwards. Hard for me not to go with him, considering the last two games, he's averaged 34 points, 4.5 rebounds, 4 assists, 2.5 steals on 60% field goal percentage. Just been extremely, extremely, extremely efficient with his scoring. He's been really surgical about it. He's not getting up like high volume amounts of shots to get to his 30 plus points. He's getting to the line. He's hitting threes. He's been just so much smarter. I mean, you see him actively working on trying to get his teammates involved a lot more as well, too. Like he's, I think in the Wizards game, I mean, they were obviously way ahead, but I think in the third quarter, he had a couple bad turnovers at some point. He was just short of 30 points. You saw him kind of force a couple bad, like, alley-oops that went, like, flying off the backboard or whatever. But, I mean, though you can classify those, categorize those as bad turnovers, he's trying to get his teammates involved. You see his gears trying to turn, like, all right, how do I get my teammates involved, even if it's against easy competition? So I think, you know, his words about, you know, following the game plan after that Miami game, I think was also intentional. Like you said, maybe we wouldn't need to look and think three layers deep with Ant and his quotes. But I do think that, you know, him saying that, hey, like, we followed the game plan. And I think he was very intentional by, like, literally, like, hey, guys, like, if we do what we're supposed to do, we're going to win. And I love that he's saying that because that's what I kind of want him to do is that, like, all right, you know, be the leader, you know, say what you got to say and say it with your chest. So, yeah, I got to give mine to Anthony Edwards, but also love Rudy Gobert this last week.
Yeah, and Ant's had basically, he's having his most efficient season of his career, basically from all spots on the floor, from, I already mentioned it, from at the rim and the mid-range and from three. And it's, I think it's just, we can take him for granted, his production and how much of a, I mean, he was the first to hit, I think, 1,200 threes in his career. Is that the number? I should just go look it up. But
yeah, I think it was that.
Like, he's the youngest guy to ever hit that mark, and obviously Curry playing in college affects that, and you're going to have to, I saw someone tweet out, like, for him to pass Curry's record, he's basically going to have the longevity of LeBron while keeping his current pace of makes per game. So that's, it's apples to apples there, but yeah, this team is going to go as far as he is able to take them, and it's not just like how good he is, it's like how the preparation, the day-to-day stuff, and like that moves into our prey of the week, which I put, who did the Wolves make their prey? The game plan, because they didn't follow it in previous games, like Ant said, and like this is always something I kind of harp on. It's like, it's not just like when they have those off games, it's not just like energy, it's like attention to detail, but in this case, like attention to the game plan, sticking to it, execution, all that stuff that it can be varied by energy and execution or like drive or whatever. But it just needs to come for this whole team, really. It's not to single out Ant, but because he's the best player, it just needs, everything needs to be more consistent throughout the regular season, because I do think there's every team can turn it on a little bit. Like, we're not expecting playoff level atmosphere every single game, but I just think how you look in the regular season affects how you look in the playoffs. And if you're inconsistent in the regular season, it's going to show up in the playoffs too. And so, like, they have this month to, like, they need to start showing that. Like, if they're still, if it still feels like this in a month, it's obviously not season over. They're still winning 52 games or whatever, but it would put a little bit of a wet blanket on, like, their chances of winning multiple playoff series in a really tough Western Conference.
Yeah, we're going to soon be coming up on the halfway point of the season here in a couple weeks. And so, you know, the Wolves aren't doomed to be who they are right now for the rest of the season. We saw that last year, obviously, when they really kind of made that run and use that momentum to push them into the postseason. So, yeah, you definitely want them to build the right habits at this point. And, you know, following the game plan seems like a very, I don't want to say low-hanging fruit, because clearly it's not low-hanging for the Wolves. But, you know, it's something that they're going to have to learn to do if they really want to hit their goals. And so, yeah, I like that. I'm going to have fun trying to figure that out into our weekly graphic. My prey of the week, Ryan, is going to be Alex Sarr, the starting big man for the Washington Wizards. It's funny. I don't know if any of you most of you probably watched the game saw in the beginning that Anthony Edwards and Alex Sarr kind of had a little pointing battle with each other in the beginning. Ant started the game by scoring a tough little finger roll layup over Alex Sarr, and he kind of pointed at him afterwards. And then a couple minutes later, Alex Sarr kind of got the rebound in like a broken play situation and went up for a dunk. And Ant was just in the near vicinity. He wasn't necessarily the main guy guarding him. And Alex Sarr dunked, and then he pointed back at Ant. Fast forward a couple minutes, Ant comes down, goes for this huge double pump, two-handed dunk, which it looked like he was fouled on, but they didn't call it on Alex Sarr, and kind of put that to bed. So sorry to Alex Sarr, but what's really sad is that Alex spent the rest of the game getting kind of big broed by his countryman, by Rudy Gobert. It looked like Rudy really had that extra juice for him, kind of like when Rudy was going at Chet Holmgren, I think a couple seasons ago as well, too, where like Rudy was really getting up for this matchup. And, you know, again, I mentioned earlier, Alex Sarr was leading the league in blocks per game, and he finished that game with zero blocks. And he couldn't even muster up 10 points, double-digit scoring that game, because Rudy was locking him down. It was kind of all over the place. I mean, I don't think he blocked one of Alex Sarr's three-pointers. I think he blocked two Chris Middleton three-pointers. But, yeah, Rudy definitely was on a mission in that Wizards game. And Alex Sarr was definitely, I think, the prime prey of the Wolves.
Yeah, the Wizards are just – whew, the Wizards are a mess. And it sounds like they might be in the Trae Young business. That's it's an interesting fit right there. But
yikes.
Before we wrap up the show, I wanted to just kind of talk about the state of the Western Conference, or maybe just where do we think the Wolves can – finish in the Western Conference. So right now they are two games up at the Suns in the seven seed, and they're 2.5 back of the 2 seed Spurs and a game back of the 3 seed Nuggets with the Heat, Rockets, and Lakers mixed in there. Just looking at it, I don't know how the Lakers keep winning games. It's kind of baffling, to be honest. They have basically a point differential of zero, while all the other top Western Conference teams have a much better point differentials, but they did it last year too. I don't know. I guess what seed, if I had to put like, what seed, if you had to guess what seed should they be and what seed will they be? And I kind of think like they should get the 3 seed. Like they should be able to pass up like the Lakers, the Nuggets, with the Nuggets having so many injuries. Like the 3 seed should be there. If I had to guess, I just kind of think they're going to not be able to do that, and they'll end up the 5 seed, and one of the Lakers or Nuggets with all the Denver injuries will pass them by. But what do you think?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I do think they're a top 3 quality team, especially just given an experience of the Spurs or, you know, the Nuggets injury issues or even the Rockets. I mean, I've been a little bit unimpressed with a lot of those teams above the Wolves relative to how the national media or just social media is talking about a lot of these teams of like, all right, like, you know, this team is here. Like they're contenders, and it's to be them and the Thunder and whoever comes out of the East. Where I'm like, really? Because I'm not quite seeing it. I mean, you talk about the Lakers. I mean, obviously, in their last 10, they've really only fed off like bad teams, and the Lakers aren't playing any defense. I mean, they magically beat the Suns, who are above 500 team, at some magical like Dylan Brooks, you know, technical foul situation. But otherwise, they've lost to every other over 500 team in the last 10 games of theirs. And then the Houston Rockets, I mean, I hear about how dominant they are, yet in their last 10 games, they've lost to teams like the Mavericks, the Clippers, the Kings, even the Pelicans. And so with the Nuggets, yeah, you talk about the injuries. I do agree. I was listening to Zach Lowe show, and he was talking about how he's really worried about Jamal Murray, you know, really wearing himself out. I mean, every season, the past couple seasons, he's really come out and he's been a little bit hurt under the weather or whatever the case is, and then he plays his way in. Well, this season he came in really fresh. I think he only missed one game before today, but already today, with all the Nuggets injuries and all the usage he's had to pick up, they ended up having to rest him because of an ankle injury that he has. And so I think that's going to wear him down. So I do share that same concern of them kind of burning out before the playoffs start. And so, yeah, I do think the Wolves are deserving of like a top 3 seed. But again, typical Wolves fashion, I think they will finish in that 4-5 area right there, just kind of given the way that they've been playing this season. But the ball's in their court. I mean, barring any injuries, you know, God forbid, knock on wood, the Wolves can stay healthy and they should be able to pass up, you know, 2 to 3 of these teams.
Yeah, and what's the big difference, I think, between now and like a month ago is Oklahoma City just seems beatable. It's not to say the Wolves would be favored or to be easy or certainly would even be likely, but like it just seems like they were like the Wolves that had no shot against that team, and I don't necessarily feel like that anymore. They probably should be and are the favorites to win the Western Conference, but not infallible like it felt like they were for so long. But let's wrap up with our 2 words. Leo, what do you got for your 2 words?
My 2 words are midterms time. I work in a college at my day job as a academic counselor in that area. And every semester, students have to go through what we call midterms. So those of you who maybe haven't been in college or haven't been in college in a long time, or even maybe high school, they really have to test their knowledge, you know, halfway through the semester. And the Wolves are getting to that half point of the semester, of the season for them. And they're about to go through a 7-game stretch where they're going to be playing almost all teams over 500 minus the Milwaukee Bucks, who just got Giannis back. And so I really think it's time for them to really like put up or shut up. I mean, we talk about how easy their season schedule has been so far. I mean, their next game, just looking at it, they play, by the time you're hearing this, the Heat today again, who are, you know, a tough matchup. I think Tyler Hero might be playing that game. They have the Cavs 2 times in a row. Then they have the Spurs, who we know are tough. And then the Bucks, like I mentioned, they play the Rockets, Spurs on a back-to-back before they finally things kind of ease up after that. So that's a 7-game stretch right there, which, you know, in my opinion, I call that it's going to be midterms for the Wolves to really kind of test themselves. Like, you know, you don't have this whole like, oh, well, you just, you know, you had a bad performance against a team that you kind of didn't really care about playing anyways. Like, no, these are all going to be good teams that are playing for something for sure. So, yeah, for me, it's midterms time.
Yeah, and I've got something's up. And I just – something seems a little bit off about this team. And like I said, maybe it's just this one single road trip. They all got back home, had a nice – got some rest, something I'm looking forward to being on the road for almost a week here. Or maybe it's something deeper. Maybe there's a interpersonal thing that's going on with the team. It's something to monitor. It's certainly not something I'm necessarily, it's more than just like being around the team like everyone else. Like, I don't know. It just seems like there's something weird, and maybe it's just classic moodiness from the team, or maybe it's something more. Certainly the last couple wins have helped alleviate that. But yeah, Leo, anything you got before we call it a night?
No, it's you know, it was time to lock in. We got a lot of Wolves basketball coming up. If you have a chance, tune into some Iowa Wolves games as well, too. They are pretty entertaining. They're very, very, very high scoring. The Iowa Wolves are one of the highest scoring teams and fastest paced teams in the G League. So tune into those. And also Unrivaled. Ryan, I'm a little sad that you didn't tell me you booked the Feast of Collier for exclusive episode on Two Words Wolves Pod. But, you know, before the season's over.
That.
Yeah, tune into Unrivaled if you can as well, too. Unfortunately, Fee is out for this whole season and is going to miss the majority of the next WNBA season, if there is one to be had, with a link. She's getting double ankle surgery, so prayers up for Fee. But there's a lot to kind of see what's going to be happening with women's basketball, professional basketball here in the States.
Yeah, I guess I will say on Unrivaled, was here for my day job here. Got to watch Paige Beckers tonight. Just phenomenal player. Awesome stuff. There was a few guards that stood out watching all these teams a couple times, and she was as good as any of the vets that were out there with her. And then just, it was in the preseason game that wasn't televised or really put out anywhere other than for internal stuff. But I just got to witness on Friday night a classic Courtney Williams masterpiece. Like, just awesome Courtney Williams pulling up from the mid-range, talking her crap. And really just kind of thankful for my week out here. Basically just been watching basketball straight for 4 or 5 days here, twice with the Unrivaled and obviously the two Wolves games I got to go to. So it's been fun, but I'm ready to be home, which I think is a good sign. It's not a vacation. It's closer to a work trip, but the good sign of any trip or travel is, like, I think if you're ready to go home by the end, I think that's like a good sign that, like, you, it's not like that means you had a good trip, which I did, but early morning flight and ready to just crash at home at some point. But thank you everyone for listening. For Leo, I'm Ryan. I will see you next week, or I'll see you later this week. And Leo and I will see you next week.
Get home and drive safe.
Go Wolves.
Ayoo!